tinted glass.
Woo! Welcome to Death Curse Society, ladies and gentlemen. Hope you guys are having a wonderful day. I'm Red Crank. I got the Colonel and Zigzag.
That's right.
Why am I wishing these people a wonderful day? We haven't even gotten started. It's going to be a rough day in the world of horror, it seems like.
I'm just saying, we may have to reevaluate the booking process on this show after this week's fiasco. More on that later. Here we go.
I had a face-splitting good time.
Don't forget to hit that subscribe button on YouTube. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And Twitch. Yes, I almost forgot. I'm hungover. And before we move any further, did you hear that? Did you see that?
What was that?
Oh, my God. It's the newest Netflix movie. Let's go camping.
You're going to Camp Blood, ain't you? You'll never come back again. It's got a death curse.
First up on Let's Go Camping, we got a chance to check out the latest horror film from Netflix. Yeah, light horror on Netflix. Things Heard and Seen, starring Amanda Seyfried, F. Murray Abraham, James Norton, Natalia Dyer from Stranger Things fame, and Nancy Allen and more. Written and directed by Sherry Springer Berman and Robert Polcini. Let's get into it. Colonel, initial thoughts on Things Heard and Seen.
Just watching the trailer, I knew I was not in for a good time. This is not my interest in horror, and it's using the term very light. Crank kind of set it up. Horror light. If this movie was an alcohol brand, it'd be White Claw. Okay, this is the White Claw of horror.
Ooh.
There was no horror. Greatly acted, especially George, who's played by James Norton, played a fabulous fucking asshole. Pretty much had everything handed to him. I don't want to say too much yet, but man, when your dick character is my favorite character, because I really want to see something bad happen to him, you're not doing the job for me.
I never, upon watching that trailer, thought I would not entirely disagree with the Colonel, but I do think there are plenty of horror elements in this story. He's right. This guy plays asshole to the Supreme. You know, everything handed to him to a point and then stops being handed to him. And then you see what a man does when that happens. It's not bad. I do have some issues with this film, though, we can get into. But overall, for a 2-hour fucking movie that's a slow burn right up Crank's ass alley, I actually enjoyed this film quite a bit to a point. And we'll get into that later.
Me? Yes. This is right up my alley. I love the slow burns. You guys know this. Let me start with this assessment. There's a lot of fucking layers in this movie. You don't really have to dig through them all to appreciate it, but once you do, it helps. There is some further investigation that is required to really appreciate this film, I think. Is that the proper way to make a movie? No. I don't think so. I do agree with some aspects of what both of you are trying to say, slightly. I did enjoy this because it is more of a character piece and it's a very deliberate version of good versus evil. That's kind of my take on it, my very, very vanilla initial take to it. Here's where we dive in. Were the artistic and theological aspects of the film too heavy-handed for general moviegoers?
Maybe for some, maybe for the most simple, but it's pretty laid out for a slow burn like this. And yeah, you're saying you went and probably looked up a bunch of facts and about it. You don't need that. In my opinion, you can get the gist of this film just by watching it. Even if it's not exactly right on historical fact or whatever, I mean, it's still, you'll get it up till the ending. I don't even know what you want to do here. You want to call it like paranormal. It's almost like Amityville, a little bit Blair Witch. Totally rips off a big ending. Me and Colonel agree on this. We'll talk about it when we get to it. It's almost like Amityville horror, but you get to see what happened, you know, beyond that night. You know, not the new couple moving in. It continues. You're right. Character driven is the fucking word here. This George Clare, I would like to punch him in the face. I mean, legitimately, he's that good of a portrayal of this and what he does, that is the horror of this. That is what is fucking scary to me, that somebody would do some of the things he does. That's where this works in the horror realm for me.
I think most people would like to punch him in the face. But Colonel, would you?
Definitely. But
that's not your real question, but.
Yeah, I don't know. This is like, dude, I appreciate you giving me some interest in this movie because your wife just isn't doing it for me. But I got to kick your ass, man. You fucking deserve this.
Let's just find him out back somewhere and beat the shit out of him, all right?
He needs it.
Colonel, artistic and theological aspects too much, or were they explained well?
Well, for one, you guys know I don't like this fucking art house, arts and crafty bullshit with Nancy Drew mixed in with it. That being said, no, I don't think it was too heavy. I was perfectly able to follow along with the story and everything that was going on and putting the pieces together. They did it just right.
Okay.
For someone like me who was not going to pull crank and dig deep into this fucking story.
It plays like a soap opera a lot. You know, it's very heavy-handed on the twist that turned within the relationship. That's where I kind of think it was like, okay, you know, I think I saw this on Knott's Landing 20 years ago. Stuff like that, you know? But, I mean, it works. It does work here.
Saying it worked. I'm kind of Zach. I think the soap opera aspect of it might turn people off because they did a great job setting it up. Now, I didn't say the slow build. Man, that was a great build-up. They did a really good job with that. Granted, I could do without the Nancy Drew bullshit, but that's every fucking paranormal movie.
What did I say to you? I go, I'm 1 hour in. I'm loving the setup. Hope this thing pays off.
I hope this thing pays off. And then an hour and a half later, you were like, they were that close.
Missed it by that much.
Missed it by that much.
I have a little bit to add on this.
Really?
Right. To be,
big
yeah.
surprise.
Really. To begin with, this is a very artsy film, and that's going to drive a few people up the wall. There is no denying that, and it subtly tries to explain that in the very beginning when a painting transitions into reality. The film even ends in the reverse style that where reality transitions into a painting. It's kind of like bookends to the film, signifying a deeper understanding required to appreciate this film. Now, before I go into the deeper meanings, I should explain, I had to do some research. I didn't just pick this up off the top of my head. I knew there were multiple layers to this, and I wanted to unravel those. This is not something a lot of casual viewers are going to do, especially horror viewers. But I was intrigued, and I wanted to know more. There are a lot of direct connections to the art world, including Catherine's passion as a painter, which she essentially abandoned for the sake of George's education and career. George is an art history professor who supposedly had a promising talent for painting himself, something we find to be one of his early falsehoods in life. And the head of George's department gives him a book written by philosopher, theologian, Emanuel Swedenborg. Now, this is the most important idea of the film, in my opinion. Swedenborg believed he had been visited by Jesus Christ himself and told a New Testament of the Bible, which he wrote down known as the Heavenly Doctrine. He promoted this to many followers in the mid-1700s, and this led to the formation of the New Church in 1787. The simple belief of his teachings was that death was not the end and that there are connections between the real world and the afterlife. The movie even begins with a quote of his, "Things that are in heaven are more real than things that are in the world." The painting that is featured prominently throughout the movie, The Valley of the Shadow of Death, is by George Ennis, and that also plays a large part in the story. It perceives the rise of a spirit into the afterlife and features a glowing cross in the sky. This plays into the cryptic ending of the film later and the correlations between the film and Swedenborg's teaching and the art from the time are mentioned frequently. A lot of that is kind of explained in the film, but it's very peppered in and not really pushed. I found the fact that the Swedenborg guy thought that he talked to Jesus, and then there's one scene kind of early in the film where George is walking down the hallway of the university he's just gotten the job at, and he's talking with the head of the department, played expertly by F. Murray Abraham, by the way. I haven't seen that guy in a movie in a while. I miss that guy. And they're having this conversation, and he's talking about George Ennis, the painter, and Swedenborg. And he says, I can't believe this guy just fell for, you know, his mystic bullshit. You know, basically, that's a big part of the movie right there. It's a small line. It's kind of a throwaway, or it's treated like that. But you can almost take that entire the rest of the movie back to that single line, because can't believe this guy fell for all that shit. And what's going on is all that shit.
He even nicely tells him, though. He says, well, you'll find that most people around here tend to agree with what he said. And well, so, I mean,
he says, you're in Swedenborg country now. So welcome. Right.
It's almost like a unintended warning.
Colonel, you kind of mentioned it. Was there enough horror in the film?
Not really. Not enough to where I would want to call it a horror film. I mean, yeah, you had your paranormal aspects, door shutting, night lights glowing, you had a little bit of blood, you had some murder. Man, if anything, I'd probably call it a little more of a thriller than a horror. And I know they fall in the same category overall, but as a straight-up horror film, this movie is not, in my opinion.
When you watched the trailer for this, did you get the overall feel of how this was going to go? Were you ready for a slow-burn movie like what we got?
Oh, definitely. This trailer set this movie up perfect without giving you fucking anything. Mm-hmm. Just based on the fact that I'm like, here we go, A24. Let's get this going, which, oddly enough, we've seen so many, I'm starting to appreciate these a lot more.
I thought the exact same thing. I was like, here we go again. Crank's done woven another one of his slow-burning fucking movies and shit. But this one makes it different. It stands apart from that. It has purpose. It fills in as you're going along, and you keep finding out just, this fucking guy's been running this game for a while, and it's fucking pretty cool. Horror-wise, that is what it is. I mean, for me, that's what it was. Like, the darkness of this man's persona. It's almost like he's trying to be good, but he's a fucking cunt. He's horrible, man. The actual little bit of visual horror we get, yeah, you got some ghosts popping in here and there. Lots of flickering lights, shadows and stuff like that running around. It's cool. You got a scared little girl that plays into it. It's definitely off-putting at times. Like, scary-wise, you know, you're not going to want to watch this in the dark by yourself, I would think, in some of those scenes. That's exactly what paranormal people are looking for. They nail it. It looks good. It's great. You know how me and Colonel roll. We like the hardcore stuff. We like fucking in your face. We like splatter, man. And there's not a lot of it here. We've got some blood flying around. But in the end, the horror here is the actual characters or character.
This movie is what The Walking Dead is to horror. So we all know what The Walking Dead has turned into is now a drama. The walkers, the zombies are kind of like just there to help push the story along. So it's here, you're told, it's like, okay, this is more about the people than it is about the ghost.
I'm with you on that sentiment, you know, where it's about the people, the ghost, for sure. That's good. That works. And unlike those Mike Flanagan things Crank's all over and into, I mean, this one actually, it's not boring. It pays off. It keeps going. You're interested. You want to see every time a new lie is turned over. If there's anything, if it's going to drag and really slow fucking burn, you're going to tune out. That's when you pick up the phone and start flicking and stuff. The story is cool. I can't deny it. I did enjoy this movie.
Hold on. Ziggy, you dropped something. Fuck you!
Wow!
So as they've mentioned, where is the horror in this film? I'll be the first to admit, classic horror elements are minimal, but I think the usage of them when they are is very effective for the overall story. The story is more of a personal drama with horror elements than a straightforward horror film. There are flashes of horror within the first 20 minutes of the film when Catherine sees a ghost in the kitchen after finding the old ring. Again, that ring plays a large role in the ending, if you catch it at all. Furthermore, there are ghosts and strange occurrences throughout, but what makes this a different kind of film is that the ghosts are there to help Catherine rather than harm her. As we discover, it's a cycle of behavior that has been repeating for centuries. And I thought that was a nice little switch and touch in the story as well.
That was cool, but I did have some problems with that when the ghost was speaking. I had to rewind it a few times to hear what the fuck it was saying.
Unless you have, like, good surround sound.
Yeah, I didn't have buds in. I was on the big TV upstairs, man.
And yeah, and you're not going to get that out of just one speaker coming out of your TV. You're not going to get that. You have to have good surround sound for that. Many viewers are going to primarily focus on the fractured relationship between Catherine and George, which is portrayed excellently throughout, and I think that's the primary horror in the film, emotionally anyway. Maybe not viscerally, but internally, that's the main horror in the film, is their relationship. Their marriage is in a very bad place. Catherine feels like she's making sacrifice after sacrifice for George's benefit without receiving anything in return, which is true. George, like you guys have already said, he's just a dick. Here I'm going to give away a few things. Not only does he cheat on his wife with the lovely Natalia Dyer from Stranger Things, but he's emotionally abusive, deceitful about the history of the house by not telling his wife about the tragedies that have occurred in the past. He forges a recommendation letter to get his new job, and then the ending, which I don't necessarily want to get into yet. Catherine at one point kind of deals with a purging thing. Like, she doesn't eat a lot. She's always in the bathroom after she does eat.
Yep.
And she drinks protein shakes. We find out later that maybe because George, being the dick that he is kind of pushing that on her. There's one line where they're coming back from a party and he says something about, well, she can certainly put away that lasagna. And she looks at him like, well, that's kind of an asshole thing to say. But I took that as he said that a lot to Catherine. And that's why she's trying to maintain that girlish figure, if you will, a symbol of perfection for him. Do you agree or not, Ziggy? And you kind of already touched on it, that the true horror of this film was the relationship between George and Catherine.
100%. The majority of it is right there. Every time, all these things you mentioned, just innocently bump into the wrong person and they're like, hey, how did you get this letter of recommendation? He actually runs into the guy he forged about.
Right.
And it's like, oh, he gets caught on the house lies. Like, just they're having a party and the realtor that rented them the house. Oh, he didn't tell you. Once again, she's forced to find out some details from somebody else. And it's just another tumbling of the dominoes of the lies. And you're figuring out that these lies have been going for years and everything involved with it. So, I mean, definitely this guy is a piece of shit.
Colonel, agree?
I agree 100%. Luckily for me, these assholes covered everything but one thing. So I got one thing to add. We come to find out this guy was an aspiring young artist who just gave it up. I don't want to do it anymore. That's because his beautiful artwork he stole from his dead gay cousin after he died and claimed they were his.
What probably killed him. Shit. Probably fucking killed him. But that's the thing. They ask him about his artwork and he goes, oh, no. Catherine, she's the artist of this family. Come over. Yeah, look at her stuff. Look at this. Always deflecting. And never wants to talk about his stuff and the stuff he did, even though his dead cousin's work is prominently displayed in his office.
In his office.
Yes. Away. But then here's the mother-in-law talking about, oh, it was a shame that he died. And yeah, there were some art things we wanted to have a display on. We wanted to have an open house. And you realize they're talking about all these paintings that are hanging in dude's office. And it's like, ooh, man.
And even when Catherine, they're moving in and she's putting, artwork on the wall. She's like, hey, where are those landscapes that you've got? And he's like, oh, yeah, they're in my office. I'm going to take them to my office. Yeah. He doesn't want them in the house where it gets talked about around her. But when it gets talked about around a bunch of strangers that he's just meeting, students, faculty, staff at the university, that's fine. Oh, it's this motherfucker is digging deep for the deceit, baby. I mean, he's just, how far can I go? It's crazy.
He just keeps throwing new lies on top of old shit.
He has to.
And it's typical, the bigger the web, the harder it is to remember all the details, and he starts to slip. And then, like I said, just for no reason at all, he runs into the wrong fucking people that just smash his whole fucking cover. And it is cool, yeah. Man.
Essentially, and this is pretty obvious, especially once you get to the end of the movie, the characters of Catherine and George represent good and evil. And this is to parallel the beliefs and the teachings of Swedenborg and the art of Innes. The relationship is more than just the differences of a true believer and a cynic. It's light and dark, which leads me to one question that wasn't really answered in the film. Was it the dark history of the house that drew George to want to be there in the first place without him even knowing, Colonel?
Yeah, it has to be, because like I said, he's so secretive about the history to it. Granted, yes, they don't explain it, but my gut feeling is yes, it kind of spoke to him and reached out.
There's credibility to that, because when they have a seance, they say there's another spirit already here, and the other one couldn't break through until the other one finished its purpose, is what they said. So that's why I think, yeah, there's something there that attracted them to it, and just based on what happened when they built the house, you know, and how they tied it all to it. It's the same repeating of history. Absolutely. I do think there's a lot of credibility to the statement that the house did draw them there to close a loop or finish a chapter in whatever the realm of the world is, however time ticks away, because the ending is a little goofy.
We're about to get into that. But yes. I agree with you guys. I think the house drew George in because, like you just mentioned, there is that scene where they're like, there is another spirit here, but it's not really saying much or giving me much. In the end, when the voices come to George, there's more than just his voice in his head. There's who I assume to be maybe Jacob Smith, the original builder of the house, the original owner of the house, who killed his wife way back in late 1700s. Let's get into the ending. I don't really have a good way to ask this question, so Ziggy, let's discuss your interpretations of the ending, and there will be spoilers.
So George, he's doing the exact same thing that happened in the 1800s. He's drugged his daughter, he's drugged his wife, and you are led to believe he's probably going to start the car up in the garage and gas the lot of them and all die. Doesn't quite go that way. So he has a colleague at the college, Justine, she's noticing all his inconsistencies too along the way, and she starts doing some digging herself, and she discovers what he's up to and what he's been doing. He can't let her live. Basically, the guy that hired him was going to turn him in, so he went out on the boat and he killed him. Justine sees him all soaked in water, obviously, because he had to jump off the boat and swim back to shore because they were out in the water. And she's like, oh, where you been, George? You been swimming? And then she's pretty much saying, I'm going to turn you in. You're done. He runs her off the road at a high rate of speed, and she's in a coma, may never wake up. And then as we get to the ending, George actually kills Catherine with an axe while she's drugged out.
I thought that was pretty brutal.
That was nasty. It was, yeah. You know, just further darkness for this asshole.
Yeah.
So he's pretty much scot-free. He's been now promoted to the job of the man he killed. He's been added to the board of directors at the school. It's all working out for him. And we have these two boys kind of doing odd jobs around the house for them, you know, fixing things. We find out their mother was also killed tragically in this same house. Her name was Ella, the mother. And that's where this ring comes in. And these two spirits, Catherine and Ella, start working together to fix this. And they summon Justine back to life. I don't know, or they wake her out of her coma. George finds out, he gets a text, a cryptic text saying, I remember everything, and everybody else will too. He realizes he's fucked, gets out to the boat he inherited from his dead gay cousin, and even though there's a harbor master going, you cannot go out, you can't go out, he pays him off a couple of $100 to turn his back and let him go. So he sails off into the water. He can hear the voices of Catherine, Ella. He's clearly, like, I think he's heading for his, it ain't a getaway, he ain't coming back. But then all of a sudden it pans out in an act from Lucio Fulci's The Beyond. It becomes the picture that we've seen out this entire movie with the cross in the sky, the one Crank has been telling us all about with its history. And you can kind of see the boat being taken down from the depths, you know, like kind of dematerializing. Again, what we don't, it doesn't really explain exactly what the hell happened, but it just seems everything was made right in the universe based on these spirits all uniting. Like, it had to happen this way for it to be closed.
I'm pretty sure it did explain exactly what the hell happened in that short scene. That's just me. Colonel, your interpretation.
Well, I'll be honest with you. Hearing Zag talk about it has not helped me at all. It reminds me of how much I did not like this ending. This is where it got too fucking art house for me. Yes, he's out in the ocean. He's on his fucking sailboat in a fucking storm. Rough waters. It fades into the painting. Fulci did it, and he did it so much better. It just, man, like it was just too fucking art house for me at this point. I wasn't super lost until they got to this fucking point. Then I'm like, okay, what the fuck's going on? So yeah, he goes in the painting and you go through, you're hearing these voices and it shows the original owners of the house and the wife's wearing the same ring Catherine had on, that Ella had on. So it's like, okay, so this ring is pretty much like an omen of death. You get this ring, you're done. You're dead.
Yes and no. I think it's kind of an omen of protection too. I think it allows the other spirits of the house to kind of keep watch over. Now, they're not very good at keeping watch.
They fucking suck at their goddamn job, then. They get one job. You're going to let them fucking get knock that protein shake out of your fucking hand?
They're the worst night watchmen of all time, but I mean, they're trying, at least.
Not trying hard enough.
But no, the ring is from even Jacob Smith's wife, who we don't have a name for, from the
1800s. That's what I'm saying, the original wife. Like, yeah. You know, they're painting their photo, painting, whatever. She's wearing the same fucking ring.
Yeah.
So, well, okay.
And when Catherine is killed, the ring falls off of her to be found by the next person that moves in, or the next woman that moves into the house. I thought.
And earlier in the film, she tried to take it off. She's like, oh, it's tight.
It's so tight. The ending seems to be like the hatred point for a lot of viewers that I've heard from so far. One of the things that is important, and you guys have both kind of mentioned it, is you have to be able to hear the whispers as the boat is sailing off into the sea. George, after killing Catherine and being temporarily released by the police, decides to take his dead cousin's boat. Yes, the dead gay cousin.
Well, the only reason why we highlighted it is they highlighted it throughout the entire fucking movie. To me, it didn't matter if he was gay or not.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
He decides to take his boat out on the lake, and at the same time, Justine is woken from her coma and is telling her story to the police. Time's running out for George in the real world and the afterlife. And in a beautiful transition, which ends the film, the sea turns into a lake of fire and envelops the ship as George descended into hell. There's even an inverted cross lighting the dark sky, which reminds us of a completely reverse imagery of Innes's painting that is featured throughout the film. Now, you can hear the voices of Ella and Catherine whispering, quote, "The gates of hell are only visible for those about to come into it. He who is evil is also the punishment of evil. Damned, they never win. The world of spirits is not heaven or hell. We stand between the two. Because of you, we are joined in spirit. Because of you, our powers grow from tiny drops to an endless sea." End quote. These are all allegorically connected to Swedenborg's philosophy, George Innes's artwork, and it's basically damn George to an eternity in hell. And that's the entire ending of the movie. And yes, Fauci did it. I understand.
Exact same thing. They walk into the painting, they're trapped in hell for eternity.
Right.
Same thing.
It's not completely original, but I thought the ending was well done.
It could be said that maybe Fauci was influenced by that work for that.
Very possible.
Very possible, because it's so fucking similar.
Catherine, on the other hand, is going to remain in the house along with Ella and the original owner's wife to help other women who are reluctantly brought to their final resting place under the skies of starting a new life. In the end, like you guys have mentioned, we see the ring again, which we thought was only Ella's after Eddie confirms it was his mother's. But this time it's in an old-fashioned photo, and the ring is being worn by the original owner's wife, Jacob Smith's wife, who was killed in a similar fashion in the early 1800s. This ring, which physically symbolizes two women comforting each other, has been passed down from one tortured woman to another for centuries and will likely pass to another after the events of this film because it slips off Catherine's finger as she's being murdered. So who's going to find the ring next is kind of like that story. Dude, I know. I thought this film was brilliant, but it's one of those you have to dig into. It's not good for just a casual viewing. It's hard to just take in as a casual viewing. That's my final opinion on it. Colonel, let's rate this bitch. Things heard and seen.
You get a slow burn, but it's a good slow burn. I really appreciated the first hour, 10 minutes of this film. I really did. I thought it was really good. The ending, like I said, just too art house for me. Been much happier if a plane of glass flew off the back of a flatbed truck and he got decapitated and that's how he met his end. I mean, if we're going to rip everything else off, we might as well rip off The Omen while we're at it. For casual viewers, I kind of watched this as a casual viewer. It's like that's not normally my cup of tea. I was able to follow along after our discussion. It does kind of make me feel a little bit better about Catherine. Though she gets to sit in the afterlife with all of her girlfriends, eating Haagen-Dazs ice cream, having a good time. Until the next girl shows up and they got to try to protect her, but they're not going to because they fucking suck with their jobs. And that's okay. Life goes on. I don't think Netflix is the best platform because 99% of your audience watching this movie are going to be casual viewers. Overall, like I said, I had to give it a 6. I did enjoy it. And it was by far the best movie we're going to review in these next 2 weeks.
There are far worse things to watch out there. I absolutely disagree with you having to take an art lesson to understand or appreciate this movie. I disagree. I think art students and people that have degrees in this kind of thing that study the history of art will appreciate this quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
However, it's not a requirement to get the gist of the story and have an effect on you. Take it from me. It's not bad. That ending, all I could see was a Fulci ending. I get it. It's symbolic. I dug the upside-down cross imagery, the reverse. Got it. But having said that, it's still a Fulci ending, baby. I mean, they did it 81. I did enjoy this movie a lot. I really hated that guy, George. I hated him. And that's good. That's good filmmaking when you can...
You're supposed to.
You can tell a story and actually get somebody to turn on a fake fucking image. I'm going to give this movie 6.5.
I appreciate what you're trying to say about not needing an art degree or anything to appreciate the film. I see what you're saying. Here's the thing. They give little pieces of it in the film.
Just enough.
There's a part of me that when I got finished watching this movie, I was like, I need to know more about this Swedenborg guy. I need to know more about this George Ennis painter. I just wanted to know. And I think looking up a little bit of stuff about them added to why I like this movie. So that's why I say what I did earlier on about you're going to appreciate it more with a little more knowledge. That's all I'm saying.
And I'm saying when he said, well, I can't believe he fell for that mumbo jumbo stuff. That kind of drew the line right there. As far as everything you're explaining, it's beautifully simple. Right there. You knew, okay, he's not a believer and he's walking in. I almost didn't know if it was going to be some kind of like cult kind of thing or... Sure. Skulls, stone cutters, or some kind of shit like that. There was a lot of ways it could have gone, but I still think I'm not taking it away. If you got the time to go and look up these things and study these guys, but this movie will give you enough where you can get it.
I like having this kind of a discussion about it. I'm not going to give this a 10. Fuck you guys. This is not Dr. Sleep. Okay. It's not far behind that, but man, I'm giving this an 8.5 only because like 8 is fairly attainable in the horror realm of movies that we've been getting over the last few years. I've given a few 8s, not many, but a few. This one just artistically for me is just slightly above like The Invisible Man or something like that. I think The Invisible Man got an 8. And I thought The Invisible Man was artistically well done. This has a little bit more on top of that, and I enjoyed it. The performances alone are worth watching because there's not a bad performance in this fucking movie at all. From Cole, the kid who's coming into manhood, but he's babysitting the daughter, but then he looks at, you know, Amanda Seyfried's tits, you know, at one point, to the teenagers that are in it, Natalia Dyer, Eddie, to Catherine and George, to the faculty. There's not a bad performance in the fucking film. And you'll recognize some of the other faces in this. Just a well-done movie, but not one of those popcorn-eating movies. This is one that if you watch with somebody, have somebody there to talk about it afterwards. I mean, this is one of those that I was like, okay, I'm scrolling through Facebook like, okay, who's watched this? Who's watched this? Who wants to talk about this? Who wants to talk about this? Because I just wanted somebody to talk to about it. All right, so Things Heard and Seen. It's available on Netflix right now. Go watch it. Let us know what you think in the comments below. And enjoy, but be ready.
Sign up for an art major class.
God damn it, no.
Hey guys, thanks for tuning in to Monday Maniacs from Death Curse Society. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Stick around.
Death Curse Society has just become an associate producer on the film.
Yes.
Bravo. Bravo. Death Curse Society, guys, is so awesome. I met the guys, all three of the guys, at Indianapolis last year for Horror Hack. And I met those dudes, and I got to tell you, like, I hung out with them. We took pictures. I signed some stuff. They gave me a T-shirt. It was awesome. They are awesome guys. So super cool. I am so glad to have them on board this campaign and also on board the film. And now they are going to be IMDb credited as producers on this movie.
Everybody's on social media these days. Well, Death Curse Society is too. Look for us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And also, don't forget to look for us on YouTube. We drop videos on there all the damn time, and you don't want to miss it. It's good stuff. Death Curse Society. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Woo!
Hi, it's Kane Hodder. You're listening to Death Curse Society. Keep listening. Or don't fucking listen. I don't care.
Welcome back to Death Curse Society. It is time. Did you guys see Annabelle behind me? I hope not, because it's time for some stories around the campfire. Spooky bitch.
Amanda!
So we checked out the trailer for The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It, which is in theaters June 4th. Ziggy, tell us about your thoughts on The Conjuring trailer.
Love seeing the Warrens in action. I don't know. I'm looking at this trailer and it's a demon possession movie, looks like. Damn, I hope they make it scary and just not retread what we've already seen in all these possession movies the last decade. Please do something that makes my skin crawl. Please, I'm begging you. But it does look okay. And again, I'm a huge fan of these two characters. Vera Farmiga and Patrick Wilson nail these characters. They have been nailing these characters the whole time. I'm looking forward to it. I just hope that it's a little bit more than just the standard possession movie. Please.
I got a heavy Amityville 2 The Possession vibe from the trailer. That's just me. But I also love Amityville 2. Maybe even my favorite in the series. I'm not quite positive about that, but possibly.
No, I mean, I enjoy the Conjuring universe to an extent. I like the movies. They're all been basically the same. This one comes off a little different, and I'm digging that. Yeah, I'm ready for it. HBO Max, baby. Unless my theater opens up before then, I can finally go back to the movies. Looks good. I mean, I really don't have much to say because I expect these will all be the fucking same. So it's like, we'll see.
Well, thankfully, they stayed in the R-rated realm, which was very important for these movies. They're barely hanging on as it is with the horror.
I'm a fan, but yeah, I'm kind of on the fence with Colonel, I think. They're okay. Most of the films are just okay. The fact that they're kind of the big franchise right now in the horror world is not necessarily surprising to me, but it is one of those franchises that churn something out every couple of years. And for that, I appreciate they've got their little side stories like The Nun and Annabelle and all that stuff. And I like that. But man, you mentioned Ziggy, Vera Farmiga. She has been one of my favorite actresses for a while now. Her and Jeffrey Donovan did one of the original USA, like original series back in the 90s, I want to say, maybe early 2000s. And I think it was called Touching Evil. And Jeffrey Donovan later on went on to do like Burn Notice and things like that. And she's gotten into this. She did Bates Motel also. She was great in that. And I remember meeting her in that series, Touching Evil, and just being like, who is this? She is way too fucking good. And I can tell she's almost being wasted in this. Patrick Wilson's cool too, for anyone named Patrick. No offense to Patricks that are watching out there. You guys are cool. You guys are cool, man. You guys have both kind of touched on this. It's a copy and paste mode. What originality would you like to see out of this movie, Colonel?
I want to see a straight fucking, almost an Exorcist knockoff, but a good Exorcist knockoff. Like, if you're going to get a possession film, yeah, you're still going to have your supernatural horror elements, you know, your jump scares, your things in the background, which is cool, but man, really go full-blown possession on this one. Because I know in the first Conjuring film, and they had a little bit of a possession. Take that, turn it up to a fucking 10. That's what I want. Give me a straight-up fucking possession movie. Let's do it.
You just want the crucifix in the cooch, don't you?
Oh. Well, this is a dude, though. So maybe a crucifix in the urethra or the butt.
Okay.
The urethra would make it a little more interesting. It'd be like splitting a hot dog. But
you're both fired. Stop.
Don't go there.
But on the meter, it goes.
Yeah. Just fucking.
Put the meter away. Put the Peter meter away.
Remember Scary? I mean, when it was absolutely like hard to look at, kind of scary. That's what I want. I'm asking for the stars and the moon with this one. If you're going to do it like this, you're going to go off The Devil Made Me Do It. That's a bold statement, man, my friends. And we need some validation. I'm sorry. This is a make or break moment for the franchise, in my opinion. They've had so much extra time to work on it. I'm really hoping for a home run here. Again, I love the characters. Don't water them down and waste it.
Yeah.
You got something here that could be really, really fucked up and memorable.
Well, the third movie in a franchise is kind of one of those weird, like you just mentioned, almost make it or break it kind of moments. If it goes over well, audiences are reacting to it the right way. This can send this franchise into 6, 7, 8, 9, you know, movie territory. Or this is that moment where it could just drop and kill the franchise.
Video.
This franchise is already in the 6, 7, 8, 9 territory. It's all your spinoffs.
I'm not counting the spinoffs when it comes to the actual Conjuring franchise. I'm counting just 1, 2, and 3 of the Conjuring for these purposes. I understand what you're saying with the spinoffs. Third movie in a series. How about that? Does that work for you better? Okay.
A little better.
Okay. The third movie in a series is pinnacle, don't you think? Since you're fucking with me, I'll fuck with you. Don't you think, Colonel?
Well, yeah. Because here's some easy fucking examples here. Friday the 13th, part 3.
Boom.
Jason Dawn's the fucking hockey mask that blew the fuck up. I mean, it's already big, but it got fucking bigger. You know, Jason became a fucking icon. Nightmare on Elm Street 3 saved the fucking franchise after the failure of fucking Nightmare on Elm Street 2. Halloween 3 is the exception because it really doesn't follow the first two, but it's what it was originally intended to be because it's a whole new story. But then again, people hated it so much because Michael Myers wasn't in it. We got Halloween 4, and it kind of brought the series, the franchise back up.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3.
That's what I was... You
wait.
Yeah. See what I mean? Boom! After that, fuck that series, you know?
Man, the reboot was all right. I liked it better when it first came out, but now it's like...
That's what I'm talking about. Like, as soon as Texas Chainsaw 3 came out, like, no interest in doing anything with that movie again. You could even go like Child's Play. You could go, you know, Child's Play 3 was the last decent one in the series for a while.
So it was the last decent one in the series. I don't even know what, for a while. So now that's a whole other topic. You got Child's Play and Texas Chainsaw, which are these huge fucking franchises. I really don't know why, because Chainsaw after 3, yeah, but really you could say after 2. I mean, Child's Play, you can kind of say the same thing. It's like they keep turning up, even fucking Hellraiser after, you know, 2 and 3. They keep churning these fuckers out, man. They just get worse and worse and worse. Then you'll get a decent one. It's like, fuck. Well, yeah. Halloween. Like, I mean, it's kind of the same fucking thing. You can say it for all of them, really.
Well, that's my point. This is kind of the make or break moment for The Conjuring 3. So, you guys better fucking bring it out there. It drops in theaters June 4th. Let us know what you think of the trailer in the comments. And, yeah, as soon as this comes out, you know we're going to be covering it. Stay tuned for that. Woo! Woo! Welcome back to Stories Around the Campfire, folks. Thank you for tuning in. But we're about to disappoint you. It's time for some Stories Around the Campfire. Well, we're not going to disappoint you, but this movie might.
I don't want to scare anyone. But I'm going to give it to you straight about Jason.
Come back.
For Stories Around the Campfire next, we're going to review the latest film on video on demand, The Resort, written and directed by Taylor Sheen, starring Michelle Randolph, Rebecca Haas, Brock O'Hearn, and Michael Vlamis. Colonel, The Resort.
Oh, fuck. All right, where to begin? I mean, fuck, I'll give you an easy synopsis here. Mildly attractive woman in a hospital telling her story, and it's how it goes. It's like, she'll set it up, and you go back in time. Set up, you go back. See that? Set up, you go back. And go to investigate this fucking haunted resort in Hawaii. It's been shut off since the 90s. It somehow still has electric to it. It's only been closed for 30 fucking years. I got to admit, Bryce Harper for the Philadelphia Phillies did a really good job in this movie. Oh, that wasn't him? Oh, yeah, I got it.
That's
I'm not assuming the actor's name is Brock, because he looks like a fucking Brock, because he looked like a fucking asshole.
That's Brock O'Hearn, not...
How did I fucking know? I didn't even fucking look into this. I just knew by his face. He looked like a fucking Brock.
You know, when you see him come on screen, all you hear is that wrestler, that Riddle guy comes out, bro.
Man, it's all about them gains, bro. It's about to get serious up in here.
I got
White Claw.
I got more of a like if you ordered Jason Momoa from Wish vibe,
right?
That's what I said last night. So pretty much what it felt like seeing him was, this was a very popular movie in the Philippines. Okay, whatever, we'll say that. And you know, America, we'll remake fucking anything. So they remake the film, they whitewash the fuck out of it, and that's who you get. Instead, you couldn't use Jason Momoa, so you got this fucking guy. Yeah, man bun and all. It's fucking ridiculous. Man, the acting was terrible. The story was stupid. Like, I didn't need all these fucking flashbacks. Okay, you got the funny guy. It wasn't fucking funny.
Thank you.
Minimum effects, which I can see why towards the end. I see where the money went. The money went to a great fucking drone shot. I'll give them credit for that. There was a couple good drone shots in that fucking movie. Not everyone was a winner, but they had a couple. I was like, oh, that's pretty good on this budget. Yeah, I don't want to get too close to what I really dug about this film until these guys get a chance to talk about it. There's one thing that really saved this fucking movie for me. Just one.
There is?
But wait, there is.
Oh, okay.
It's up mine and Zag's alley. You'd be like, oh, that's okay. I know me and Zag are probably like, oh.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, maybe. Yeah, I mean, that wasn't, yeah. Okay, I think I know where you're going with that. After seeing this, The Resort, I almost have to apologize for all the nasty things I said about Slacks a few weeks ago. Almost, not quite. Could have been a decent 10 to 20 minutes short. But someone decided to stretch this premise into a barely fitting feature film and make it 76 minutes. The writing, bad. Acting, worse. Editing, really fucking bad. And lastly, can we talk about the sound design? What the fuck? Holy shit, who did that? Did someone actually get paid for that? Or were they doing a freebie for a friend and just sucked at the job? Well, there were moments that the characters were talking over each other during a rather important part of the movie.
Yeah.
And the dialogue, you really had to focus to listen to because of the sound design. What the fuck is wrong with these people? What? Go on, Colonel.
Hey, no, no, it's someone like this. That's all I got to say about that.
The Academy Award for sound design mimicking goes to the Colonel, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank
Would you like to make your acceptance speech?
And all up here's...
Fuck you, Colonel. Ziggy, technically, any good aspects of this besides the drone shots that the Colonel mentioned?
You know, even if this had been on Shudder, maybe... But I commend them for not picking this up, because this is your absolute cookie cutter, dust off any old formula from the shelf of horror that you've seen a million times and bring the premise in here. Nobody can act. They all take turns sucking horribly at the acting, and the timing is brutal in the responses and everything. It's so takes you right out of anything you can lock onto with this story or caring about any one of these four idiots walking around this fucking resort. There ain't much to it, man. And the ending's brutal. It's all bad. It's all fucking bad, man. I paid $8 to watch this fucking thing. I want my money back. All right, Vertical, I'm talking to you now. Give me my fucking money back, you fucking thieves.
Yeah, that is one thing I was thinking, because when you do a digital purpose, can you ask for a refund like you can in a movie theater when a movie is really fucking bad? Never really tried it, but I thought about it for this film. Normally, my tell if I'm into a movie is how far into the movie am I when I have to stop and look at my phone the first time, like for any reason, like, you know, Facebook sounds more interesting right this moment. For like Things Heard and Seen that we just reviewed, I was an hour and 7 minutes, and that was only because I got a notification while I was watching it, and I had to see what the notification was. And it was one that I had to open up and respond to. This one, like 6 minutes. I was already on my phone 6 minutes in, and I was like, fuck this. It was that fucking bad. There's literally no horror elements in this movie for nearly the first hour of it, which is part of why I say it could have been a better short film. Secondly, I hated all the characters. Like Colonel said, the comic relief guy wasn't funny. The hot girl was an unlikable bitch. The nice guy boyfriend was too Aquaman and unbelievable. And Lex, the main character, was horribly thought out and developed. The whole movie was so one-dimensional that it barely held my attention, but I kept hoping for something cool to happen to snap me out of my boredom. And like you guys have mentioned, there is one visual effect near the end that got my attention briefly. But I'll say it, they even held on that too long, and it began to look average to me. Let's get into it. Colonel, you brought it up first. Tell me about that effect that saved the movie for you.
Here's exactly the moment that saved the movie. You got your comic relief guy, he's fucking possessed, I guess. You know, apparently that's what this half-faced girl does. She possesses people, whatever. And he's just all, you see your hands come around, start ripping his fucking face off. All right, I will agree with Crank. They held on to that scene a little bit too long, but I think that made me appreciate it more because it kind of gave it that extra cheesiness that only this movie fucking deserved. It just gave it just that much of like, okay, this is looking cool, and now it's looking really fucking fake, but I dig it. Because that was literally, besides the two drone shots of the waterfall, the only thing that held my interest in the 76 fucking minutes. And that effect was really cool. There's your fucking budget. And that's where your budget needed to go. If you're going to hire these shitty fucking actors and you're going to tell your story for fucking flashbacks, that's your fucking story. And you get an ending that's so fucking predictable and fucking stupid. And this has even nothing to do with the effect. This is going to tell you guys how bad this movie is. All right, so this fucking meathead leaves the girlfriend's backpack behind. They have to go back and get his backpack. It's so fucking important. He's got her cell phone and has all of her notes on it. Shit. The self-centered is like, I need my backpack. It has my phone in there. It has all my notes. I can't leave without my backpack. For one, pen and papers work great for fucking centuries. You ever consider that? Not everything's better on a phone. So eventually they go back and get this fucking backpack where it's not where it's left. And it's the, they're trying to get out of there. Hold on. Again, I know this has nothing to do with the effect. This is telling you how stupid this fucking movie is. Hold on. I got to get a picture. Man, if you're going to make that such a prominent part of that fucking scene, could you at least have her take a real picture on her fucking phone where the flash goes off, where the screen's not black and shit, when she turns around, there's no flash or nothing? God damn, at least put a little bit of fucking realism in this. Oh, I should probably put the flash on my phone. We're going to turn it the fuck on.
Right.
Sorry, but yes, the face peeling scene by far was the highlight of this movie. Sorry to go on a tangent about something totally fucking opposite of what I was originally talking about. People had to know how bad this fucking movie is.
Yeah. Do you agree, Ziggy? Did the face peeling scene save it?
The face peeling was good. They did hang on it a little too long. I appreciated it because I went, okay, it's nice and wet anyway. There wasn't like a skull underneath, good dangly flesh hanging there. It was just, he was just not scary as a possessed person. No. Now, Jason Momoa, when he takes his demise, I actually dug that one a little bit better. You don't get to see as much, but he gets the fucking stomp right on his head, the head squish. There you go. That's a couple of points in your favor.
I'll be honest, though. Hold on. I'm tired of the head squish.
Went to the head stomps in every fucking movie that has gore now, man.
It's overused, man.
I fucking love
it. It's been a while since you've seen a good face ripping.
I don't give a fuck. I love head stomps. I love it. Bring more, but make them. I want Dr. Sartarian style with the squish and the splat and everything. This one was a little dry, but they had some CGI stupid blood on it. But I mean, as far as practical effects, the guy's ripped face. That's pretty much it. Your half-faced girl, your fucking ghost or spirit wandering the resort. Not fucking scary in the least. At least do the fucking Evil Dead thing and white her eyes out. I mean, when you can see her focusing on the fucking camera, it just didn't do shit. It's not fucking scary, and it was a waste of fucking... I want my money back. Vertical, you're going to be hearing from my lawyers.
The half-faced girl, again, another cliche that I'm kind of getting tired of is the whole... Every character that's possessed or evil has to, like, move in a weird, like, or at least stand up. Like, their back is fucked up. I'm getting so tired of that. And they did this, like, 3 times in this movie. But pretty much every time the half-faced girl was shown.
They're twisting the bubble wrap every time they show her. You know, right. That stupid sound effect and everything. Fuck this cliche cookie-cutter crap.
Getting tired of it. Now, okay, after watching this, I was compelled to figure out why the hell any studio or producer would put their name behind this. So much less any money. I did discover that actress Michelle Randolph, who is Bree in the film, aptly named Bree, of course, is the sister of former Bachelor contestant Cassie. And between the two of them, they have over 2 million Instagram followers, which seems to be the only reason this movie got made in the first place. Look, producers, studios, movie backers, lean in. I want to give you a secret. Good movies start with a great script, not a fucking Instagram fame. Fuck you. Bullshit. God damn it. Why does this keep happening? Why does this keep happening? I'm so sick of just, I've got 2 million followers and they get a goddamn movie? Are you fucking kidding me? It's movies like this that keep the horror genre on the back burner for a lot of moviegoers out there. And this is the bullshit that pisses me off. Yeah, Vertical, you're going to be hearing from Ziggy's lawyer.
That's two. Colonel, would you like your money back too?
I will. Let me put this way. Vertical, hear me now. You know, change your name to Horizontal when we take all your fucking assets. Take everything you got. That's $24 we'll never get back.
We got another one of your films coming down the pike.
Oh God, I saw it.
I'm dreading it already.
You've already been earmarked, bros and gals. Get your shit together. Seriously.
Rating for the resort. Huh. Ziggy.
I really question your pedigrees in horror. Some of the technical things about this movie, the drones, were nice. They were fine. You got a lot to learn about sound design, lighting, many other factors that go into making a successful movie. You got to get at least one actor who can fucking act, preferably two that can work off each other.
Ooh, what a valid idea.
This didn't
work. Chemistry, that's a thing?
Maybe you want to have a couple extra mics and then drop down the sound of the people walking near the couple that you're trying to hear the legends of the island and what's going on instead of her getting a photo of her ass. And how does that look? And it's so distracting. It's brutal. Got another movie coming your way, Vertical. I hope you fucking learned your lesson on this piece of shit and you do better. We're going to fucking gut you on the next one. I'm sick of this, man. Ridiculous. Wasted everybody's time with this fucking project. This is what your marquee is going to be. This is the realm you want to live in. No problem. We're going to label you just the way you are. Good luck. For the head stomping, for the face ripping, the resort earns 3.5.
Good God. Colonel?
That's generous.
That's very generous.
That is very generous. Man. So, here's the bad part. When I say your drone shots look nice. A couple of the drone shots were nice. That's why I lead off with.
Right.
I was telling you this movie is complete and utter bullshit. So, like I said, for your two drone shots, now there were like three or four that were fucking shit. Mm-hmm. And that helicopter was flying a little low to the fucking ground, like lower than it should. That didn't make any sense, but I digress. Your two good drone shots, the face rip I thought was really good. I enjoyed the head stomp for what it was. I would have liked to have seen a little bit more. Yeah, other than that, your movie is terrible. Fucking terrible. If I was Charles Barkley, I'd call it terrible.
Saw your little twist at the end there coming a mile of fucking way too, vertical.
Yes.
Mile away.
Yeah, and that was obviously fucking imposed on that fucking phone. That your phone ain't going to look like that. But anyway, it's like, so you know when you take the SATs, you kind of get points just for getting your fucking name right. For those drone shots and the face rip, two drone shots and the face rip, I give you 3 points. You get a 3 out of 10 for those. And that's being nice. I'm grading on a hell of a fucking curve right here because honestly, you deserve a fucking 1. But the head rip was really fucking nice. And like I said, the two drone shots going up the fucking waterfall are fucking beautiful. I don't like people enough as it is. So I'm going to stay the fuck away from this island because no. Come on, man. Like, seriously, the fucking doors are just going to shut on the fucking truck and it's going to start by itself and drive around. Come the fuck on, man.
I'm glad Ziggy brought up the twist. I was trying to avoid it because it was just so stupid. I'm kind of glad you mentioned the drone shots because I was trying to think of anything redeeming from this movie. I could not think of anything, but yeah, sure. The drone shots and the face rip. Those are the highlights. Again, I'll say it. Make this a 15-minute short film and it could be kick ass.
There was no saving this one.
But this, as a feature, even a short feature, fucking sucked. You guys are being way too nice with a 3 and a 3.5. You keep saying, oh, I'm trying not to give it a 1. Fuck that. I'm giving it a 1. This is a fucking 1. If I thought about going to just half. Like, half! You know, like the old Eddie Murphy bit. Just 0.5. I thought about it, but I was like, I don't know if I can. That's, I know I asked a while back if I could give a movie 0, which we can, but I'm choosing not to. I'm sticking with 1. Here's the thing. Viewers, if you're watching this and you're even considering watching The Resort, don't. Do not waste your money until it's free somewhere. And even then, don't waste your fucking time.
This will be on the free on demand next week. Don't worry about it. And you know what? By the way, having remembered that ending and how fucking horrible that was, I'm revoking a half point and going down to a 3. All right? For the first time ever in the history of this fucking show, I am retracting points that I previously gave for performance and execution of a fucking piece of shit movie. You now have a 3. Choke on it. I'm done with this.
For this movie, I'm going to allow that bullshit movie just pull because once it's spoken, it is set in stone. So let it be written. So let it be done. You gave it a 3.5, but for this movie so fucking bad, I will allow it. I'm not even going to bitch about you changing your score at the last minute.
And here's another thing I think is amazing about this. This movie inspired a rant from me. This movie inspired a rant from Ziggy. But this movie did not inspire a rant from the Colonel, who is known for his rants.
Man, doctor said I need to work on my blood pressure.
Okay.
This movie was bad. There's not a lot of redeeming qualities from it.
No.
But, dude, we've seen so much shit. I'm getting used to shit. Like, it's just, it doesn't even anger me anymore.
You are the one that also does, like, even if you hate a movie, you're like, if I'm going to say something bad, I got to say something positive first. And you really do try to exude that. Me, fuck no. No, fuck that. This movie sucks.
2 weeks. You'll be able to watch it for free. Trust us.
It'll be on Amazon Prime or Tubi before long.
Yep.
It'll be on Tubi real soon, yeah. So The Resort, it is available on video on demand. Don't waste your fucking money.
Actual photo of my eyes while watching The Resort.
Fuck it. The Resort. It sucks. Bye.
Resort from buying this.
I'll be right back. don't get dressed.
Oh, fantastic. Oh, holy.
Thanks for tuning in to the official Death Curse Society podcast, gang. Did you know we also have a website? Well, God damn it, we do. DeathCurseSociety.com. Get over there. Check it out. Look at all the stuff we've got. We've got all our YouTube episodes on there. We've got a membership program. We've got our store. You can buy some cool-ass shit. So get over there, DeathCurseSociety.com, and check it out. Woo!
Welcome back to Death Curse Society, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. Here are some more stories around the camp.
Amanda!
So we checked out the trailer for Fried Barry, coming to Shudder May 6th. Yeah, this one's kind of strange. Barry is a drug-addicted, abusive bastard who, after yet another bender, is abducted by aliens. Barry takes a backseat as an alien visitor assumes control of his body and takes it for a joyride through Cape Town. What follows is an onslaught of drugs, sex, and violence as our alien tourist enters the weird and wonderful world of humankind. Fried Barry is based on the short film of the same name, which earned 57 official selections, 12 wins at festivals around the world. I'm not quite sure what to take on this. So, Ziggy, what do you think about the Fried Barry trailer?
Aliens invade and possess a drug addict. This is a new premise. Yeah, I don't really know. I mean, it's hard to tell where they're going to go with this. To me, The Hidden comes to mind. That's anytime I get these things where someone takes over someone like that and they can actually interact still. It's going to be interesting, I think. But boy, I really don't know where they're going with this. And I guess that's part of the intrigue on it. It does seem interesting.
So you're saying it looks original in a way?
It could be.
Maybe. All right. Colonel, what about you?
Yeah, this is a lot to try to get a hold of and figure out. This is fucking weird. I know what I'm hoping for, which I won't get. I'm really hoping by the end of the movie, maybe takes like a shotgun blast to the fucking face or something. And we go all Men in Blackish with this little fucking alien holding onto his brain, like, or something like that. I think that'd be fucking awesome. But I know I'm not going to get that. Wishful thinking. I mean, I'm intrigued. I mean, it looks like a fun fucking ride. I'm all for it. Fuck, hell's on Shudder. They really haven't let us down that often lately. So I got high hopes. It can't be any worse than The Resort.
God, are we going to keep bringing that movie up like we did Slacks?
Listen to me.
If we're going to keep beating dead horses, yes. I'm going to keep beating this dead horse.
I do not want to hear that name mentioned one more time on this broadcast. Today.
No, I don't give a fuck. I'm sorry, shit. Guys. This is like literally my last resort, okay?
All right. I'm going to have to resort to this and go on the trailer. It does seem different. There is something intriguing about this trailer to me. And that's what almost scares me. Like, here's the thing about Shudder's films. If the trailer doesn't really seem to wow me lately, I've liked the film. If the trailer is weird and I think, oh, that's interesting, then I hate the fucking film for some reason. There's a weird imbalance going on with, I don't know if it's just a marketing team or they mean to do it that way, or maybe that's the new trend, but this one seems interesting, but I have a bad feeling I'm going to hate it after I see it. So.
Yeah, this screams it's either going to be good or fucking terrible. I do not see any in-between on this film.
No.
That guy's a riffraff looking motherfucker, isn't he?
His look I like. There's something about that, again, that intrigues me. But then I just have this weird feeling based on other Shudder movies, you know. Hopefully it doesn't let me down, but we'll see. Colonel, do you like his look?
Yeah, for what it is. There's nothing I haven't seen before, at least the look. He fits the name, I'll just say that. So.
Mm. Oh, so Fried has something to do with drugs.
Yeah.
Those old 80s commercials are coming back in style, it seems like. With the fried egg.
Okay, last time. This is drugs. This is your brain on drugs.
What the fuck?
Beet juice in the house. This is your brains on drugs. Oh, shit, son.
Any questions?
So Fried Berry, it comes out on Shudder May 6th. We'll be talking about it here in a couple of weeks once we get a chance to check it out. You should check it out. Let us know what you think in the comments below, and we'll be back. Woo! About the stories around the campfire, we've got more stories around the campfire. Yeah. And none of this will be an island. So we checked out the trailer for The Devil's Child, which is coming to Video On Demand May 7th. And I saw something very disturbing in the trailer, and it wasn't anything to do with the movie, except it's coming from Vertical Entertainment. Yeah, I know. Ziggy, how excited are you for The Devil's Child?
As far as I'm concerned, you've already got two strikes against you. Already going into this unseen, just seeing this trailer, and I hope you can prove me wrong. And that's all I got to say. I'm waiting. I can't wait to watch this movie. I can't wait. Not for the reasons you think that I'm looking forward to anything that could be possibly redeeming in this movie. I already know. And I will have my open mind when I step in to watch this. But I am not expecting. I'm going to set the number at 2 right now. Let's see if they fucking can beat that. 2.
Colonel, what do you think about this Rosemary's Baby ripoff that we're about to watch?
I mean, that's exactly it. Been there, done that. Man, I just know I'm not going to like it. I really shouldn't say that because that means I'm just not really going to give it a fair chance, which I will. It's just, dude, it's just, I mean, the scariest thing I've seen in this fucking trailer was an old dude getting a fucking sponge bath in bed. Okay? I mean, I was like, what the fuck? Like, why don't you take him out of bed? Like, he's just going to get fucking water all over his bed and waterlogged on his fucking bed sores and shit. Like, that just can't be sanitary. You're going to cause a fucking infection. That just, yeah, I mean, dude, we've seen this a million times. I know we can say that about every fucking horror movie. I know I'm going to say that again here shortly. But we've seen this before, man. It just, is it a ghost story? Is it a possession movie? What is it? It's a little bit of everything. You guys going to cookie cutter this shit? Put on video on demand for $6.99. You're going to charge me $7.41 after tax. And then I'm going to give you a lower score on Vudu than I did on the show for your last film, The Resort. Fuck. Dude, that's $14.82.
Yeah.
Of my life, I will never get back.
Yeah. 2, huh, Ziggy? Is that what you're saying?
2.
What?
I said 2.
Oh, okay. Sounded, oh, Vertical Entertainment, bad sound design. I get it. That's why I couldn't understand you.
Hey, guys. This is The Devil's Child. I just want you to know that I did not authorize this story in any way, shape, or form. Okay? Vertical Entertainment can suck my red horned dick.
There you go, guys. You got the review from The Devil's Child himself. I don't know why he's deciding to speak through Ziggy, but...
What happened?
You okay? Are you okay? Are you okay?
Are we about to review this trailer or what?
Oh my God. We may have some problems here that I'm not sure a trailer review can get through. Yeah. The Devil's Child comes out May 7th on video on demand. Go and check it out or don't. Let us check it out and we'll tell you whether or not to check it out. Let us know what you think of this trailer in the comments. Woo! Welcome back to Death Curse Society. One more topic for stories around the campfire. Woo!
I don't want to scare anyone. But I'm going to give it to you straight about Jason.
So we checked out the trailer for Initiation, coming to video on demand May 7th. Colonel, how'd this one grab you?
This looks bad. I mean, like, really bad. We got a slasher. The mask looks like shit. We got us a new driller killer. That's an original idea. He's killing sorority girls and frat boys. Okay. Cyberbullying. To really put my exclamation point on it. Let's see what we got. Hey, at least it's a slasher.
Your dog loves it. Witten University unravels the night a star athlete is murdered, kicking off a spree of social media slayings that force students to uncover the truth behind the school's hidden secrets and the horrifying meaning of an exclamation point. Ooh, how is punctuation supposed to be fucking scary, Ziggy?
Oh, boy. They're taking current affairs and working it into old formulas. I appreciate it. I appreciate this is an attempt at a slasher, which gives me a small bit of hope, but very small. Dudes, your fucking killer looks like Clytus from Flash Gordon, okay?
Step forward, Baron.
Address me as Prince Baron.
No longer. Princess Aura, under our persuasion, has implicated you on a charge of high treason. You're under arrest. A prison ship will be here shortly to take you away.
You tortured Aura.
An interesting girl. I think she found it rather enjoyable.
That's not scary. The drill, yeah, you know, just, you know how to do a slasher. You gotta have some good kills, man. You gotta do it. And if you don't do it, this shit is gonna flop big time. Your trailer is covered in text overlays over the actual movie. I hope this isn't how you shot this thing, because that is extremely distracting. I thought Shook did it pretty effectively. If you stay in that area, you should be okay. But this just looks like your run-of-the-mill, basic, everyday slasher to me. But having said that, it is a slasher, and you got me for that. So hopefully I don't have to tear you down like Verticals works, but I'll be ready to if needed.
I think you might as well get ready. So social media mixed with Slumber Party Massacre, mixed with Sorority House Massacre, told in modern times with the Flash as the killer.
Flash! Ah! Savior of the universe!
No, I'm not interested at fucking all. Social media, I know, dominates a lot, especially young people's lives. I understand that. But it doesn't mean that every fucking movie has to just have it plastered on the screen, like you were saying. No. Initiate this, and I'm grabbing my dick, because I do not want to. I don't even want to watch this. This is one of those movies where, just for principle alone, I might have to break out the fuck this shit, I'm out card, because I just don't want to watch it. And I'm going to have to pay $7 to watch it at my house. I don't want to. Right?
Dude, you're not wrong.
Okay.
You're not wrong. You know, me and Zach, again, up our alley. So we got a little more hopes for it. It's like, you know, it's a slasher. I don't need the best fucking script.
That's true.
Give me some good, gory, original deaths, which they all look the same in the fucking trailer, and I'll be happy. It'll be worth my fucking $8 or $7.41, whatever it's going to fucking be. Just
okay. You sold me. I'll watch it.
He walks down the hallways doing the Michael Myers. It's a nice pursuit, some stalking going on. It's all your slasher tropes in there. That's fine. Just now give it to us the right way, and you'll be fine.
I have low expectations for this. There aren't a whole lot of college set movies that I'm a big fan of. There are some exceptions. May 7th, it comes out. We're going to watch it for you guys. And then we're going to let you know what you think. Or, yeah, we're going to let you know what you think. Fuck you.
Yeah.
We'll tell you what to think.
Yeah. Now I'm about to tell Crank what to think. H2O was not that good of a fucking movie, dude.
H2O was not the movie that I'm talking about.
Urban Legend ain't that great either.
Oh, yes, it is. Fuck you, Colonel.
Urban Legends.
Yeah, May 7th, video on demand. Check it out. Woo!